Grace, greetings, and welcome to the Deeper Daily Podcast for the 29th of March. I'm your host, Paul White. It's an honor to be with you every single day of the year. The DDP tries to take you a little deeper into wherever we are in the Scriptures. Most of the time, we're going verse by verse. Occasionally, we switch it up and do a little bit different. But right now, we're in Galatians and moving. I don't really know if we're going fast or slow. We started the book of Galatians on the 1st of January. Here we are near the end of March, and we are in the fourth chapter. It's probably pretty slow, but that's okay. In a world where everything is fast, quick, instantaneous, even this podcast came to you through an amazing miracle of technology. You have it in your hands and can listen to it. But in that world, it's okay to slow down once in a while. Take our time in a Bible study. We've been getting some feedback from all over the world of people who are doing exactly that with this study. They're going through it. I got word from a sister just the other day who's leading a Bible study using this material. And that's awesome. We have heard from others who are doing similar things. Maybe not in such a formal setting, but in one way or the other, and that's pretty cool. That is an amazing, amazing thing that we're able to be a part of that, and I'm honored. Galatians chapter 4, we broke down the greater context of what Paul's trying to do. We worked our way through a couple verses from chapter 3 and then through this first seven verses of chapter 4, but we would be doing, I think, a disservice to some of the particulars of these verses if we moved on to verse 8. So I don't want to do that. Instead, I want to go back to the top of Galatians 4. Having given you the context of where Paul is going, I want to look at some of the sort of intricacies of how he gets there. Let's put verses 1 and 2 together because they are one sentence, and they don't make a lot of sense to really split them up. Now, I say that the heir, as long as he is a child, does not differ at all from a slave, though he is master of all, but as under guardians and stewards until the time appointed by the Father. Now, of course, we know, because we've seen greater context, that Paul is calling the heir, those who are in Christ, they are Abraham's seed, they are heirs according to the promise, but an heir, as long as that heir is a child, this is a maturity thing, well, that heir is really no different than a slave. So he may be heir of everything, but he doesn't get anything because he is under a tutor that governs what he can and cannot do. And that tutor is not allowing him to come into the fullness of his inheritance. Only his father can appoint the date when he will come into the fullness of that inheritance. Now, Paul will tell us who the father is and the fact that we've come into that. But let's stay with Paul in this journey because he does something here quite remarkable. Israel has a slavery history. A people with a slavery history never really lose that pain. We see a little bit of that in, and it's probably certainly not in exactly the same context, but we see a little bit of that in America. We have a slavery history in America, and we have to deal with that. We have to deal with that individually. We have to deal with that as a race. We have to deal with that as a people. We may not like the discussion, but we can't get around it. It exists. It's real. There were people affected. And even though there's no one alive who was either a slave or a slaveholder, we still deal with the inherency of the pain or the guilt that comes, and we have to individualize that. I'm not saying we ought to feel guilty or we ought to feel hurt, but I know that those things are real and they exist and they have to be dealt with. Thank God we have new creation realities and know how to deal with these things through the cross. My point being, if we're dealing with that and we see it so glaringly obvious in society, so was Israel, still dealing with that. In fact, here they are now dispersed in a nation that is not their own, without a true land, living under a king they don't want, and I'm talking about the time of Paul, then there's still that mentality that has to be dealt with. Paul does something fascinating. He takes all of that pain, all that angst, all that history of being a slave, and he reinterprets it. And he says, not only were we slaves in the land of Egypt, but we were slaves under the law because we were never truly a free people. We did not have individual liberty. The law did not allow for individual liberty. It choked out faith. And by choking out faith, it choked out that individuality. And that was really a major purpose of the law. And there's a lot more. We could certainly go down that road. I don't know how deep I want to go down that road. I'll just leave that there. But Paul's remarkable analogy is that he takes a very painful thing like slavery and he reapplies it and says, we entered another kind of slavery under the law. It was the kind of slavery where we were under guardians and stewards until there was an appointed time. He then tells them that that appointed time is a man named Jesus. But that first verse, the heir, though he's an heir, as long as he's just a child, he's no different from a slave. And I don't know that we've really captured the power of what he's saying. As long as we were children with a tutor over us, with the hanging law over us to tell us how to act from the outside, like a dad telling his kids what to do, that's necessary. Paul said, but as long as that was our life, we were never really fully heirs of promise. We were hopeful heirs, like a prince who's being taught to be a king. He's a hopeful heir. He knows what's coming. But he's not really that much different than anybody else in the house until he's the king. And then that graduation into being a king happens. But this is an interesting analogy of slavery. And I think it gives us the right, and I do so with great carefulness and trepidation, but it gives us the right to say that the elements of external how to live for your righteousness always treat you like a child. And when you see renewals of externals on governing your performance to conform to a norm, you are in one way or the other being treated like a child, but you are to a greater extent being treated as a slave. Your individual liberty needs to come because someone has fulfilled your time. And that someone, of course, is Christ. We'll start moving into that over the next few days. But tomorrow, that great third verse where we find out what it means to be under the elements of the world, that's fascinating. And I'll see you then. Grace, God bless.